Hello, you beautiful soul. Welcome. You are here listening to the Claudia Varas podcast. I am your host, Claudia Varas, a former corporate manager in tech, turned career change and mindset coach and business owner. This podcast is all about a real, raw, unsketched, and fun perspective on all things related to our human experience. It is a space for us to, for once, slow down and talk deep. We cover real and raw stories alongside with practical key takeaways and tips on how to reconnect with your authentic self so that you can achieve any fucking goal that you desire in your career and life without hustling and actually trying to fit in. Listen, my mission is to help you heal at soul level and raise the vibration of the planet. And you, my dear listener, a part of this mission. It's only through these kind of conversations that we inspire others to take action and think differently. That's how we actually make a change in the world. So your task is to go and share this episode or any one or two insights and learnings with two friends and tell them that if that inspired them too, to share it with two more friends. Let's create a ripple effect together and change the world. Listeners, you are in for an absolute treat today. We have a guest speaker here that his critical thinking and innovation really blew my mind. It's Harvey Safter, who is the founder and managing director of Creating Futures That Work, amongst like other incredible things that Harvey is doing that he will share with us. And I met Harvey, or I had the pleasure to meet Harvey, when we did our TEDx talk at the end of May in 2023 in Madrid, and Harvey was a fellow TEDx speaker, and that's how we connected. And I'm just so freaking excited that Harvey is here to share his wisdom, his very innovative approach to learning and cultivating skills for the future. And I'm just really excited for you to hear Harvey's wisdom. Harvey, hello.
Claudia, hi. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you for being here. I know that you're super busy. The last time we rolled, you were just in Brazil, opening up an incubation center. Is that correct?
Yes.
So tell us more about that work that you do. Like specifically, what have you done in Brazil? What is like your whole work about?
Yeah, well, the Brazil project is a wonderful place to start because it's such an exciting and an important project. So I have an organization called the Art of Science Learning, in addition to Creating Futures in the Work. And the Art of Science Learning does a lot of international work, does a lot of work with research and nonprofits and so forth. And we've developed a whole model for incubating innovation. We developed it originally through a partnership with the National Science Foundation here in the United States. We have done incubators across the country as part of NSF programs and then independently as well. And for the last 5 years, we've been doing some work with a remarkable organization in Brazil called Fiocruz. So Fiocruz, also known as the Instituto Oswaldo Cruz, is probably the leading public health institution in all of South America. It's been around for 125 years. They are an extraordinary center for research, for study, for public health dissemination. They build drug capacity for the country, all kinds of innovative work around infectious diseases and controlling them and helping underserved communities. So out of that partnership, and they've had a longstanding interest in innovation at the intersection of art and science, we connected, we began talking, and during the pandemic, we kind of came together and said, you know, that maybe this is an opportunity as we come out of this to find new ways to work together. And so we began exploring the possibility of launching an incubator for innovation right there in Fiocruz in the heart of Rio de Janeiro. So the idea is we work with arts-based experiential learning as a way to bring together scientists and researchers and also market-oriented management people, people from the private sector, community leaders, and so forth, but really bringing them together to develop new ways of approaching the public health challenges of the community. So our innovation is all intended not just to be novel, but to add value and to have impact on really important challenges. So we launched this pilot incubator in June in Rio, and it was immediately after our TEDx that we had the opening sessions. And it was really just extraordinary. We spent a week immersed in all of this. Now we have teams that are working on some really exciting ideas. And the work continues through the summer into the fall. It's a 6-month pilot. And by the end of it, we hope to do two things. First, we hope that at least one of the teams will be ready to go to market with an important innovation that will really impact the community and the institution's ability to deliver on its public health objectives. Second, we want to build the capacity of the institution and the people that are involved in working in this project, their own innovative skills and their mindsets on innovation and future-ready leadership. So off to a great start.
Wow. Wow, what a way to kick off H2, no? The second one of the year, incredible. So Harvey, there is so much there to unpack. And there are two words that you continue to mention, and it's also something that you shared in your TEDx talk as well, right? Around the impact of arts and humanities on learning and leadership, which by the way, for everyone listening, the TEDx link for Harvey's talk is right here in the notes below. So please go check it out. It's fascinating what Harvey's talking about. And in there, and also now in the way that you describe the Brazil project and what you're doing there, you mentioned two words like arts-based and innovation. So tell me more, Harvey, on how does arts-based experiential learning contribute to innovation or innovative skills?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's a really rich topic. So we often think of artists as innovators, and artists are perpetually innovating. But beyond just the sense that art must be innovative, and we've all had experiences in one way or another with art as a way of changing our perspective and opening us to new possibilities, but we've actually done experimental research that dug deeply into the question, how does arts-based learning affect the key skills of innovation? So first of all, let me explain what I mean by arts-based learning. So what we're talking about is having people work with artistic skills, processes, and experiences as ways of sparking their own innovative capacity and strengthening their creative thinking, their collaboration, their critical thinking, their empathy, their resilience, a whole range of things. So we've tested these in the laboratory. We've done experimental research on them. Other researchers have also looked at different aspects of the way that the arts connect with innovation. It's clear there's a powerful causal relationship. And if we can put a link to my website in this, I can share some direct data, which people who are interested in understanding those connections better can look at and see for yourself.
Yeah.
So what actually happened? So we work with people, we give them the opportunity to engage in different kinds of art forms. It's not one special art form that makes the difference with one special skill. These are actually cross-disciplinary, multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary, universal tools of human expression and growth and development and learning. And so we find that you can teach almost anything to almost anyone with almost any art form. If you do it right. So how people make those connections are as varied as the people themselves. But all of our things, and I'm talking about everything from charcoal drawing and clay sculpture to experimental theater and improv work and classical music and jazz to idea models and poetry. All of these have embedded in all of these powerful opportunities for learning. What we do is we give people the experiences and we help them connect the dots between what they've experienced and what it is that they're trying to do.
Wow, Harvey, this is such an innovative approach, right, to learning and creating skills, including art-based experiential learning. And from what I understand, you're doing this work in Forbes 100 companies, right? Like Electric, IBM, Morgan Stanley, Siemens, Johnson & Johnson, the list goes on and on and on.
Yes.
So how do you actually convince, quote unquote, convince a senior leader at a company like Morgan Stanley that in order to create the future skills of innovation, problem solving, critical thinking, that an arts-based experiential learning path is the most efficient one?
Well, so I think that to convince anybody of anything, the single most powerful thing that you can do is to give them the opportunity to experience it.
Yes.
So what we really try to do as much as possible is give leaders the opportunity to explore and experience it for themselves. Once they do, it tends to sell itself because the benefits, the impacts, the power, they're not only obvious, they just come to life, they burst to life. And once people have experienced it, they tend to understand the power of the learning and they're eager to find ways to apply. But although that's really the most powerful way of doing it, it's not necessarily sufficient. So in addition to giving people direct experience, there are two other things that we need to do. We need to tell compelling stories, and we need to give them compelling data. Mm. So stories, we have many case studies, we have many examples of how we have worked with people using arts-based experiential learning in organizations, in large complex corporations, in many different kinds of settings, and the impacts that they've had, which have been really amazing.
Mm.
Also have compelling data. And that's why, in fact, we undertook the whole decade-long research project of the Art of Science Learning in order to develop, to investigate this, to understand if the data would actually support these claims. And once we did, to develop and refine them. So we can tell a whole story. We can show a whole picture. We can use data to engage people on in the analytical side of the thing, but most of all, the experience of doing it. That makes all the difference.
Mm. Yes, I love how you say this, because it is true. People have to experience for themselves. And that was what was so cool about your talk as well, the TEDx talk, because Harvey, literally, we had three or four people, right? Yeah, that don't have any art experience or drawing experience, and they actually created something super beautiful. So please go and watch this TEDx talk, because it is mind-blowing. Even the participants were also so shocked and surprised about the outcome of this. So, okay, fascinating. Now, one of the things that comes up here for me when it comes to arts and the creative world, right? You've mentioned that there's the different eras, like it's painting, it's drawing, it's theater, it's music, all different eras.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, at least when I grew up, it was kind of seen that the art world is just this very different world where you cannot be successful, essentially, right? So my parents used to tell me, do something proper, even though I was very creative, right? And so, you know, I'm sharing this because I feel like there's this misconception about what actually art creates for people and what parts even of the brain it stimulates and what skills it can develop. Yes. So if you were to share the top three things that you've seen in all the research that you've been doing, that doing creative work, doing artwork in any shape or form, how does this actually make a better person, a better leader, a better employee, a high performer? What's the correlation there?
Sure. So the things that you can learn through arts-based experiential learning is such a rich set of them, but I'll name a sort of a few top ones.
Yeah.
So the first thing is that, and there's a lot of research data that supports this, when we trigger the circuitry in the brain that's triggered by looking at art, thinking about art, and making art, we're triggering neural circuits, substrates, which are the same circuits. They share these common substrates with the circuitry of empathy in the brain.
Mm.
So there's this common foundation. And when we trigger one, we're triggering circuits that activate the other. So the implications of that are profound, because when we think about empathy, we think about the role that empathy plays in innovation. It's a deep, powerful role. Innovation springs from understanding what real problems are, real people, and what will add value to those people, what will have impact on their problems, and getting it adopted, making it feasible, building the capacity. All of those also require lots of people. So any leader who's operating with empathy is one of the foundational core skills and tools and sets of resources that power innovation. And we know from experience, from research, and from our own field research, that the impact of arts-based experiential learning on empathic behavior is really profound. So one of the ways that we know that is we've set up teams under controlled circumstances, teams of scientists, teams of business leaders and educators, working on different community challenges. And we've observed their behavior over the whole set of time that they're working together. We've had control teams that are working on the innovation. We've had identically composed experimental teams. We're doing the same thing for the same amount of time, except they're spending a few hours of that time making art together. And what happens is their behaviors of empathy just soar, their emotionally intelligent behavior, their empathic listening, their openness, their transparency, their trust, their mutual respect, all of these kind of key things. So that's one of the very powerful effects of works-based experiential. So another one, and this is the one that really is kind of behind what we saw in the TEDx talk, when we had a few people who haven't done any drawing since kindergarten do some pretty complex drawing and wonderful things in 5 minutes. We did that by turning what they were drawing upside down. And so they weren't actually thinking about, this is a horse. I have to draw a horse. I don't know how to draw a horse. The last time I tried to draw a horse in kindergarten, they laughed at me. It didn't go very well. I don't like it. So instead of that, they're doing something different. They're as they turn it upside down, they're just doing what we ask, which is to copy the lines, draw what they see, nothing more, nothing less. And what happens in the process is that all those self-limiting beliefs, which hold all of us back all the time, and so many things that we do, those little voices that are telling us, I don't know how to draw, I can't do that, I've never ridden a horse, I don't even like horses. And suddenly we have to do this. But once we turn it upside down and we have that experience, our self-limiting beliefs fall away. So we've had that experience for 5 minutes, but that stays with us. And I know that it stays with us because I've had the experience, we've done this with thousands of leaders over the years. And sometimes I'll go back into a leader's office that I've worked with a decade ago. And in their office, on the wall, is that horse that they drew with their signature, the corner of it, because they're saying to them, I did this thing that I didn't believe I could possibly do. Yeah. I did it in 5 minutes. What else can I do?
Yes. Yes. This is so powerful. And it makes me reflect, Harvey, from your expertise and experience and research, because this arts-based experiential learning, so spending more time within that area, you've mentioned it creates more empathy, right? And in the second approach that you've mentioned, dear listeners also can see in the TEDx talk, it helps to, let's say, face the self-limiting beliefs that you can do something that your mind told you that you cannot. Do you see or do you believe that this also has a positive impact on people's mental health overall?
I believe that powerfully.
Yes.
I believe that what we do with art is that we connect with the most deep, most intuitive, most powerful parts of ourselves that don't always have an easy way to express themselves in life because we haven't necessarily created the space for them. And it's not always easy to create the space for them. You know, we were talking earlier a little bit about language and about, you know, it's always wonderful to learn a new language. And for me, one of the things that's most wonderful, every time I've ever learned a language, I've suddenly discovered that there are these parts of me that always wanted to express themselves, but never really had a way to do that in English. You can't express it exactly, sure I could. But learning a new language suddenly opened those things up. Mm. And that makes me a more whole, rich, more complete person, and also filled with more possibilities than I had before. So this is what the arts do for all of us, because the arts represent an extraordinarily rich, complex, multi-layered set of possibilities. It's a universal language. It's a universal alphabet of creative expression. We all have access to it. And once we start developing the practice of doing it, it changes us by allowing us to get in touch with all these different parts of us, to express them, to bring them into the world, to share them. We develop our own kind of sensitivities and awareness of others and what they're doing. And all of that improves us on so many different levels. In my experience and my observation, it improves our mental health and it actually improves our physical health. There's actually a lot of evidence that it does that.
Fascinating. You know, like, it just fascinates me to talk about this because, especially nowadays where we struggle with so many mental health challenges, or people struggle with so many mental health challenges, and the numbers just keep on rising. There are so many things and tools that we have that are just available to us, and that they don't cost anything really, right? And just art in a shape or form, like, of course, depending what you do as well, right? But there is just something about taking a pen or taking a brush and just like letting things out. Now, why do you think that people, the older they become, the less they leave the creative side behind?
Yeah, it's it's hard because I think that all of us live our lives with so many constraints, so much pressure, and we all kind of cope with that in different ways. But there's this tension between the things that we haven't done yet that we want to do, the things that we are dying to explore, the things that excite us and that we're passionate about, and the things that we've learned through experience work and we become dependent on. We become used to, we become comfortable with, and maybe the things that we've learned or think we've learned through experience that don't work, and the desire to avoid this. So those are sort of very natural human conditions. But the question isn't sort of whether there's going to be that undertone in life. There will be. The question is, what do we want to do? So I constantly think, and I think this is also one of the great things that we learn with arts-based learning, is if you think of the creative process that we use and the process of innovation, you could think of those as two successive waves, divergent and convergent. So by wave, I mean, first when we diverge, we start someplace and we think of lots of possibilities. We radiate out. So this is what we sort of often think of as creativity because it goes in lots of different directions. And that's cool. But then there's a second part to it. That's the convergent. That's where we apply criteria, critical thinking, and data and analytics. And we use those to make choices, decisions. Okay? So these waves come in pairs. So the first pair is all about what's the problem? Where's the opportunity? What is it that really matters? I want to do. The second one is, how do I want to solve that problem? How do I want to use that opportunity? We kind of often forget about the first one and jump straight to the second one. But so much of actual success with creativity lies in the arts. The arts kind of keep us constantly working at all four corners of that construct. And that's a really powerful thing. Life tends to often drive us habitually into the ones that will apparently deliver the immediate outcome that we're seeking, since we're time-bound creatures in so many ways. And so art is also a way that we can develop our personal practice of constantly exercising, stretching, and developing our muscle capacity around all of these things.
Yes, and I see this so much in my practice as a professionally certified coach, is when people feel stuck, it is because there is this inability to actually solve the problem that they're facing right now and hence take action, right? Because they're just so, because people are just so stuck in this one way, instead of actually enriching perspectives or allowing themselves to get out of this through potential like arts-based learning or arts expression just in general. That in itself, just as you've mentioned, activates a different part of our brain, which helps us to actually get out of the stuckness.
Absolutely. You know, I think of these so many situations. We have a phrase that we often use, which is ready, fire, aim. So we spend so much of our lives sort of shooting at targets that we haven't actually identified yet. And so there's that. But the flip side of this, and this is a really hopeful thing and a really powerful thing. So all of the skills that lie at the heart, all of the behaviors, all of the attributes, all of the mindsets that lie at the heart of innovation and creativity and the kinds of change that we're all trying to make in our lives. These are dynamic skills. So what I mean is, it's not like you're born with this skill and this is who you are and that doesn't change. They're all dynamic. They all change. They all change. And what's more, They're all practical skills. And that means the way you get good at a practical skill is you practice it. So one of the things that art helps us do is it helps us focus on the skills that we really want to build, we want to change, and gives us opportunities to practice them in ways that we never thought of before. And that just stretches us wonderfully. And it gets us in touch with different levels. You know, when you did your TEDx talk, which I really love, by the way, and I just so much appreciated the grounding in the body and where you take that and where you start there and back to that. And I feel that art works so organically together with them. They're different expressions of the same thing. And, you know, that also brings me back to the thoughts about art and science and how people are convinced of things and what the value of these skills are. You know, it was Steve Jobs who said during his years in exile, actually, not when he was at the height of his power, but yes, during the years in the wilderness, he did a series of interviews that I found in oral history buried in the Smithsonian. And one of the things that he said is that I never really understood the difference between an artist and a scientist, because these are people that are trying to basically do the same thing. They're trying to change the world through new ways of seeing it, new information about it. And in a sense, new models of it. And that's kind of what we do. We play at those boundaries. We give the people the freedom to not be choosing between art and science or mind and body or any of those things. But it's a much more organic, holistic way of living and being.
Fascinating. Fascinating, Harvey. So one of the things, the words that you've mentioned that really struck with me is expression at the end of the day, because you know, in the body work, in the somatics work, in coaching, but also in art, it's actually about expressing your emotions, right? And not staying stuck in them. And actually one way to really move forward is to express how you're actually feeling in order to then create space to move forward and actually create space for problem solving.
Absolutely. And
so expression is an incredible word that just stuck with me, and that for you, dear listener, I really want you to take away this with you by asking yourself simply, what ways do you allow yourself to express yourself? And especially in the corporate world, where it's a lot about pushing through, sucking it in, and just like not allowing ourselves to feel anything, you as a human being, you have to have a space where you express yourself. And maybe it's art, right? Any form of art.
Yeah. And every time you do it, you just grow as a person. And if you think of it in terms of the business world and the marketplace, you also grow in the value that you have. Plus we add value when we bring our whole selves and everything that we're capable to the challenges that we face and the opportunities that we encounter. And these are really rich, powerful ways of doing that.
Yes. And so bringing value to the marketplace as a person, and that comes back to the things that you've mentioned and the skills of, like, for example, innovation, creativity, you've talked about collaboration as well. That these are the skills for the future, right? Would you add any other skill to that besides innovation, creativity, collaboration, anything else you would add to that?
I think that empathy.
Empathy.
And resilience are absolutely key. And actually, there are a whole set of them. We've identified 15 of them. The way that we identified these is actually studied hundreds of different innovation processes in different cultures, in different settings, everything from corporations to community settings to small rural communities and large urban settings, academic research, all of these. And we studied them carefully to try to find what are the common denominators of success, common denominators of failure. And what we really comes down to, there are four major skill areas that matter to innovation outcomes. The first is readiness to learn. Mm-hmm. And everything that goes with readiness, that's a big and important one. because in order to be ready to learn, you have to be open to new information. You have to be willing to engage different perspectives. And you have to be comfortable enough to say, I don't know, and I want to know. So we have to be curious, have inquiry skills, but most of all learning starts from a place of humility, which says there's stuff out there that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is that okay, that's exciting, because that's where it starts with what we don't know. Okay, so there's readiness to learn. Then there's cognitive agility. So this is incredibly important. It's always been important, but the last years have made it so much more important, because if there's one thing that we can absolutely count on, it's that tomorrow is going to be different from today in ways that we can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, there are people who spend huge parts of their lives trying to resist that and trying to stem that tide. And it just doesn't work out very well. It's not a very happy experience.
Yeah.
And part of what working with RM does is it helps us to really kind of embrace that uncertainty and that ambiguity. You know, sometimes we work with a form of, it's an ancient Japanese art form called suminigashi, which involves painting, floating paints on the surface of the water, and then printing on rice paper, so that the surface of the water is your canvas. And you can paint incredibly beautiful, wonderful things. In fact, I encourage people to just try it yourself, Google it, and you can order little kits and experiment with it at home. It's a wonderful thing to do yourself, with your kids, with your team at work, in lots of different settings. But the reason why it's so powerful is because, so here you are, you have these paints, you have water. You can't control paints. You can't control the water. Maybe you can control yourself, maybe. But what you can do is you can influence those things. And so to create something beautiful that you're happy with means you get into this dialogue with the things that you're working with. And you use your influence to try to shape and guide. But you have to give as well as take. And it's a different kind of leadership, but it's a pretty powerful metaphor and set of skills for how we lead so often, say how we have to lead in environments where we don't have formal authority and where we can't actually control the people that we're ostensibly leading, but we can shape and influence what happens.
Yes.
So that's the second major skill.
Yeah.
Third major skill area is collaboration and everything that goes with collaboration. So we're talking about perspectives. There's the ability to behave with empathy. So to feel empathy is one thing. To connect empathy to behavior in lots of different situations, that's a really powerful thing. So if you think about empathy, there's sort of two parts of how classically we define it: the ability to understand something from another person's perspective, to see through their eyes, to walk in their shoes, and second, to appropriately take that, what you learn through that, and integrate it into your own choices, your conduct, your behavior. We think a lot about the first, less often about the second, and it's the whole picture that really makes for the powerful and happy behavior, which is at the core of success and innovation. And then the third are the actual skills of team leadership. Are you fostering collaboration? Are you actually, through the culture that you are you guiding teams by giving them what they need in order to succeed, equipping them, and so on and so forth? The fourth broad area then are what I think of as the kind of the core, where the rubber hits the road, ability to activate information. Can you identify opportunities? Can you actually identify problems and choose the right problems to work on? And can you solve them in ways that add value and are not, and have impact on what you're trying to do, and you make good choices and good decisions along the way of getting there. So that's a set of 15 skills. And we know through research that where these skills are robustly present, the likelihood of innovation goes up wildly. We also know that where there are major gaps, the likelihood of failure goes up equally wildly. And so it's really key to develop the skills. We've done research with teams in which we've done experimental research, once again, where we had teams that were working on challenges and then control teams that were using some different methods, which included a little bit of arts-based learning mixed in with what they did. And we found that the teams that work with arts-based learning had powerful solutions to better targeted problems. They work better together. They were more likely to succeed. And it translates into the team outputs, it translates into innovation, and it translates into the creative and critical thinking that gets them there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, fascinating. So I want to come back to these four skills that you've mentioned. Before that, we talk a lot about innovation, right? Like in this podcast, but it's also a word that we hear outside in the world, in the corporate world, everywhere. We need to innovate, innovation, driving innovation, influencing innovation, all of these things. In your own definition, how would you actually describe slash define innovation?
Yeah. So there are lots of different definitions, so I'm not going to suggest that mine is the only one out there. There are lots, but this is one that I actually believe in, that I've experienced, and you study innovation in history and around the world today, this is the one that fits the most power. There are three things that determine whether something is an innovation, and then there are two other things which are close to that. So the three things that are sort of the core determinants, first of all, is it novel? If there isn't an element of novelty, it might be a great idea in many ways, and we can, we may want to adopt it, adapt it to our needs, all kinds of things. But most of us would agree that innovation, by definition, requires something novel. Okay. So that's necessary, but certainly not sufficient. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, does it add value? Mm-hmm. So this is tricky, because value is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And how do we determine what adds value? In contemporary society, we determine value, broadly speaking, through the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Now, notice I said broadly speaking, because it's not restricted to the marketplace of cash and money. Mm-hmm. That's an important part. It's very important, because we invest in the resources of the things we believe have value. So that's a measure. But there are other things that we invest besides money. So, for example, are we able to attract customers? Are we able to attract investors? Are we able to attract the kinds of workers that we need? Are we able to attract interest in the idea? Will people give their time, their support to support the idea? All of these are ways of determining whether something has value or not. But all of these are different aspects of the market. Ultimately, ideas that can't attract the necessary support, whether that's in money, in resources, in political support, in partnerships and collaborations, in time devoted to it, if you can't attract those things, you probably aren't generating the necessary value that would cause people to do these things. So that's the second condition. Again, necessary, not sufficient. The third condition then is, does it have impact? So you can have a new idea that lots of people love and are involved in different ways and maybe buy or whatever it is. But if it doesn't actually accomplish anything that you're setting out to accomplish, it doesn't have impact and it's not really innovation. So if you have all three of those things, you almost have an innovation. So now we come to the two conditions that I said are right next to those. Mm-hmm. So you have everything you need at that point, but then the question becomes, can you actually do it? And that's really critical, because innovation is not an abstract concept. It takes place when someone, some group of people, actually brings it into being. So in order to bring an innovation into being, you need two things. First, it has to be feasible. So if your innovation is something which humans don't know how to do at this point in our development, it's a nice idea. It's a great thought experiment. It may be a wonderful theory. It may lead to all kinds of advances, but it's not actually an innovation. It has to have that level of feasibility. So if the first step in your innovation is, we're going to simply suspend the laws of gravity and act as though they don't exist, or the theory of relativity, or whatever it might be, okay, it's kind of hard to go to the second step from there.
Yes.
So it has to be feasible. So then the other condition is it has to be feasible for us. So it might be theoretically possible, but if we don't have the capacity to do it, it doesn't matter. So we might have an innovative idea which requires a rare mineral which has only been identified in the universe in a place which is 5,000 light years away. In theory, it's feasible to go 5,000 light years away and get it and bring it back and 10,000 years later start working on your innovation, but you don't actually have the capacity to do that. So again, it belongs more in the realm of thought, experiment, theory, or fiction than it does innovation. So if you have all of those things, you have an innovation.
Okay, and so to the last point of, you've mentioned like, so it has to be feasible in theory and then also feasible to actually bring it into reality, which makes sense. The question that comes up here for me is, but how do we know whether it's feasible in practicality, right? Because then it comes back to like, I mean, all the things that Elon Musk is doing, you know, crazy or not, however you want to describe it, the 4 mile a minute with Banner back then, like how can we discern what is actually practically really possible?
Yeah, the only way we can know that is to try it.
Yes, yes.
And experimentation is at the heart of it.
Yeah.
And the willingness to suspend disbelief in ideas is critical. You know, it's one of the biggest problems that we all have in organizational life and every place else. You know, you sit, work in a room with people, complex problems and different ideas, you're on a team and whatever, and you're trying to work together. But everybody in that Zoom room or sitting around that table, every single person believes, not just believes, they know in their heart that they have the best ideas. Their ideas are better than anybody else's. I know mine are the best ideas, and you know that too. We're human. This is what we believe. So to actually get any, we have to say, okay, I know that I have the best ideas, but I'm going to just suspend my disbelief in your ideas long enough to actually hear them, to try them, maybe to build a little prototype and experiment with them, see what the evidence tells us. And from that, we begin all kinds of things. That's actually the power of that upside down horse and the overcoming your self-limiting beliefs. It's suspending your disbelief in yourself. We also have to suspend our disbelief in each other, in ideas that we didn't invent, that other people did, all of those things. And when we do that, we find out, okay, sometimes some of the things that we open ourselves up to are fantastic, and they change the world, they change our lives. Some of them are really pointless, and we've tried them as an experiment, and we discard them, we move on.
Mm-hmm.
It's that openness and flexibility, that cognitive agility.
Yes, exactly. And that comes back exactly to the four core skills that you've mentioned earlier,
yes.
Right? So the readiness to learn, cognitive agility, collaboration, and the ability to
activate innovation.
To activate innovation, exactly. And so, as you've also mentioned before, that is, these are all skills that are dynamic and practical, right? Meaning that you have to practice them and you have to learn them. So learn them, practice them, and just become very strong at them. It's not like any one of us is completely born with each of them infused in us. We have to learn and practice that. So that's for you, listeners, something to take away from this as well, is that whatever your voice is telling you of all the things that you can or cannot do, these are all dynamic and practical skills, as Harvey's mentioning, so you can learn them if you're willing to and if you put the right work into it.
One of the things that's been really exciting over the last couple of years, this has been sort of a new evolution in our work that came during the pandemic, is we began actually working with coaches to help coaches use these techniques to develop those skills in the field that they work with, and the awareness of the value of those skills and the behaviors that allow them to practice.
Yeah.
And we now have a core group of 50 certified coaches around the world that are working with these. And that's also a really exciting thing to see, as others then begin to take hold of them, develop their own ways of working with them, their own things that they can add into the mix, and the ways that it benefits so many people.
Yes, this is incredible. So I can see, Harvey, you're on a proper mission. And it's just incredible, because I can see and I understand, based also as well what you've mentioned on the research, the data that you have, and from your own experience, the impact that this just has is incredible. And so for anyone that is listening, and the audience here is very diverse, it's entrepreneurs, it's corporate professionals, it's leaders, it's managers, it's individual contributors, single moms, parents, it's a very wide range of the audience that is listening here. How can one get started to develop these core skills through arts-based experiential learning?
So when you think about the ways that we connect with the arts, so first of all, the simplest and best thing that we can possibly do is to explore things that interest us, mm-hmm. that we're curious about, that excite us. So a lot of times it just starts maybe with a walk in nature, but also maybe not just a walk in nature, but maybe we want to take something along that can help us to focus our observations and capture. That could be a journal, where we capture our thoughts and then begin to express them in our words. It could be a sketchbook, where we just begin to sketch the things that we see and give them shape. But these are little ways of opening ourselves up to the world and then beginning to use art in different ways to not only capture what we see, but to begin to then bring us into the world of expressing ourselves. Things that we see, reacting to, synthesizing, using them as jumping off points for our own expression, development, growth, and possibility. A simple trip to a museum could be a museum that you've never been to before. It could be one that you've been to 100 times since you were a kid in your community. Either way, it doesn't matter. But going with the idea, I'm going to go today with fresh eyes. I'm going to go look at something I never saw before. And maybe I'll look at it from different points in the room, up close, distance. Maybe I'll sit down, stand up. If your museum permits it, maybe you're going to take a sketchbook. Most of them do, actually. Mm-hmm. And maybe you'll just sort of capture some of the things that you're seeing, that you're feeling. The point isn't, can I become a better artist or as good an artist as the artist who created them? It's, can I do what the artist did, which is looked at the world that I saw and use that as a jumping off place for what we can be, what we can do, what we want to become, what's possible. So these are all sort of little daily things that you can do. They begin to kind of put you on in a direction that can change your life profoundly. These are little first steps down a journey of exploration and curiosity, and inquiry, and change. It can start with music that to it. I mean, all of these different places.
Easy. So it's very tangible. It's very practical what people can do.
Yes. And of course, anybody that goes to either the Art of Science Learning website, the Creating Futures Work website, will find lots of tools that they can work with, lots of resources to learn more about this. And of course, anybody that wants to get more deeply involved with it can connect with us about coaching or about other kinds of services that we provide or that our network of certified coaches.
Perfect. 100%. We'll definitely link all these resources in the notes section below as well. So go, people, check that out, please. And, you know, Harvey, I have one more question. Well, actually two. The first question is more around, why do you do what you do?
And so it's a great question. I'm not totally sure I know how to answer it, except that it's always felt like the organic, natural thing to do. It feels like what I should be doing. You know, I started, my first language, we've talked about language. My first language was music. Yes. I learned to read music before I learned to read English. Wow. And so that's very deeply in me. In college, I started hanging out with a rougher crowd, so I started doing theater. And so that connection with other people and with audiences and with teams and with the exploration of character, that's all deeply embedded in. I've worked with many, many different art forms as a creator, as somebody who's connected the arts with learning, as an educator, and in business. And I believe through my own experience and what I see in the world, I think that we have so many problems in the world that we face, that each of us faces every day as an individual, and we as a species face on this planet. And look at all these tremendous, wicked problems. You can think of those as failures of the imagination, where we as people, as individuals, as a society, have not yet risen to a point where we can envision what the problems really are and how we want to solve them. If we look at where the imagination tends to fail, it's precisely at the fault lines between different disciplines, because we are trained and developed. We were perhaps evolutionarily conditioned to be very discipline specific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the division of labor is where disciplines first came from. And we became this very discipline focused species operating in a world which demands intercross transdisciplinary approaches to these things. So if our imaginations are failing at these kind of tectonic fault plates between the disciplines, then art is both a powerful way to engage the imagination, and bringing art into learning, into science, and art into business, and into corporations is a powerful way of overcoming those gaps and unleashing the power of our imagination.
And then just on top of that, if we cultivate all of these things, and then the ability to problem solve in an empathetic, innovative way, that, just imagine for a second how the world would look differently if we had this empathetic lens, if the leaders in our world nowadays had this empathetic lens on top of innovation and solving the problems for the real problems that they are, and not the symptomatic problems that appear to be, right? So this is incredible. Wow. Okay. So I see that you've had it, you grew up already with this whole exposure to art, and it's just incredible. I find it very fascinating, Harvey, how you were then able to turn that passion and that that ability, that skill set that you have into something so easily tangible for people to develop too, and essentially become healthier and happier and also better leaders.
Yes.
Incredible. So last question.
Sure.
Yeah, cool. So, Harvey, what is one thing that you wish you would know earlier? Sorry, what is one thing that you wish you would knew earlier that you want everyone else to know right now?
That the ideas that I have been working on for so many years are ideas when I started. They weren't even clear ideas for me, much less for anybody else. And as they began to become clear, they seemed so impractical to other people. And hearing it often enough to me also, I never doubted for a moment the power of arts-based learning to change lives and to change organizations and society in ways that really matter. And that they have powerful good. But I have had to overcome huge amounts of doubts in others and doubts in myself. And I don't think that doubt is necessarily a bad thing, because doubt can really spur us to do some critical thinking, to challenge ourselves and our assumptions, and to decide what we really want to move forward with and how we're going to overcome it. But I sure would have love to have learned earlier on that the fact that people doubt the practicality of something as seemingly revolutionary as using the arts as a way of developing leaders and sparking innovation in science and technology and dealing with bottom line challenges that business has. I would have loved to have learned earlier on that that wasn't something to be afraid of. That in fact, it worked. We had evidence that it worked. And that over time, with compelling stories, data, giving people the experiences, that would win out.
So believing in yourself and the idea, and especially in your case, because it's driven on pure intention of really making positive impact in the world. And so I'm sure that many people listening, there is this, you know, this voice in the back of the head with an idea, with the desire to make an impact, with the desire to live a fulfilled and mission-driven life. And so the message from Harvey here is like, use your doubt as a fuel and trust yourself and believe in yourself and just continue to learn and work on this dynamic and practical skills and not giving up.
And that's incredibly important, both the not giving up and the continuous learning.
Yes.
Even as you don't give up, you do change. And you change for the better when you confront that doubt and learn from it.
Amazing. Harvey, I could go on with you for like 2 hours in this conversation. It's incredible. There are so many incredible nuggets and knowledge and wisdom that you're sharing here with us. And I'm sure that the listeners are taking away huge amounts from this conversation. So thank you so much for your time, for sharing all these things, for opening up and for sharing your mission with us. And I really appreciate you. I'm really glad that our paths crossed, and I know it's not going to be the last time as well.
Sure enough, Claudia. Thank you first so much for the opportunity to do this and for this really wonderful conversation. The questions that you've asked, the things that you've posed have been just fantastic. And thank you also for the work that you do, because I think it's powerful, wonderful, and so valuable.
Thank you, Harvey. Thank you so much. As a closing tradition, we just do a little bit of grounding to make sure that we can absorb all this information and this wisdom exactly as we need it. So everyone, just please, if you can, if you're not driving, close your eyes for a moment. Put in your left hand on your tummy and your right hand on your chest. Take in a deep breath in through your nose and exhale through your mouth. And just know that everything that you need and want and desire, it's exactly right here where your hands are. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Harvey. Speak soon. Bye-bye. Okay, amazing.
Wonderful.
Harvey.